At this time, it is my very special treat to introduce our speaker. She is a friend, a mentor, and a person whom I have chosen to emulate. Reverend Sharon Watkins is from around here, as they say, having grown up in Pickens County. After graduation from local schools, she attended the Candler School of Theology and graduated from Emory University, ready for her career as a Methodist minister. Sharon is now the volunteer chair and CEO of Gilmer Arts. But what Sharon has done is not as important to me as who she is. Sharon is a friend who will show up at your door immediately after you call her at 2 o'clock in the morning because you need to go to the hospital. Then, using her well-honed Native American skills and science knowledge, she'll probably diagnose your illness and recommend a course of natural remedy treatment. Don't fight it, she'll be right. Sharon will also give you expert guidance when you are ethically conflicted, or when you face gut-wrenching choices with a dying pet and need someone's advice about when treatment becomes torture. She is also the person with whom you will laugh uproariously at the least little thing after partaking a bit too much of the bubbly while in Italy. Or she will drive, make that float, the rental car through a pond in the biggest flood in Ireland's history. And then when a part falls off the car, tell you it's because she drove the hell out of it before she baptized it. I could tell a lot of Sharon stories, but I don't want to take up her time and simply ask you to welcome the Reverend Sharon Watkins.
I'm glad Melba didn't tell the real stories. It is my pleasure to be here today. When Melba had talked with me about coming and Carl had assigned me a topic, Restoring Common Decency, I thought, oh boy, I have never really been there in the sense of thinking that through. But lately, what can I say? You can't help but think it through. So, tell y'all a little preacher joke. Once upon a time, there's this guy who owned a dog, and he was very proud of his dog. And he thought that he had the best duck hunting dog in the world. So he took a friend out in the boat with his dog. He shot a duck. The duck landed in the water. The retriever got out of the boat, walked on water, went over, retrieved the duck, came back, and put it into the boat and sat down. His friend looked at him and said, "Your dog can't swim, can he?" When it comes to politicians and when it comes to our culture, when it comes to fill in the blank, the fellowship in a gathering faith group, we all have opinions. And somehow our opinions and our prejudices surface even when we don't want them to. Decency. When we talk about restoring common decency, we might say it's kind of like that pornography thing. We know it when we see it. But most of the time, decency has been a pretty hazy concept in our culture. We disagree between what is obscene and what is free speech. But I want to talk to you today about what the kind of cultural norm does that we accept in our American states. We have always been uplifted by stories of decency, especially in politics. So often fraught with ambition and ego-driven competition, when the norm is decency, other virtues can thrive. Integrity, honesty, compassion, kindness, and trust. Relationships are stronger, so politicians are more apt to work across the aisle. Rhetoric is less divisive, coalitions are more diverse, and dialogue is more frequent. In some ways, political decency is a sign of a healthy democracy, but in other ways, it is the cause of it. Whatever the starting point is, decency unites, it inspires, and it brings out our strengths and shores up our weaknesses. You know, when I think about the far religious right and the evangelicals, in the beginning, Max Licato, whom you may have been exposed to his writings over the years, he's a very popular conservative Christian writer, he said that our current administration did not pass the decency test. As a society, we've kind of sunk into this false piety thing. Let me give you an example, and I'm going to apologize ahead of time because I'm going to use a word here. It's like the story, it's not the story, it's a fact, of one of the ministers who was working in the late 1800s in the slums of New York. And he said in his pulpit one Sunday morning to his people, he said, "It's a damn shame that there are children starving in this city." And then he said, "You're more concerned over the fact I said damn than you are that the kids are starving." This is a false morality. A morality not based on compassion, but one based on, would judgment be the word? Would lack of compassion be the word? And this is where we find ourselves. And we have been here before. Make no mistake, we have. I graduated from high school in the small town of Jasper, Georgia in 1974. Anybody remember 1974? Yeah, I mean, it was a hazy decade. Definitely. However, I do recall that we had things on our plate like the Vietnam War. We had all sorts of craziness going on in our country. We had just kind of completed the civil rights movement and the fact that we had passed laws and had not yet implemented those laws. And we had Richard Nixon for president. The guy who said, "I'm not a crook." And everybody just kind of laughed, you know. What was there to say? But I recall that what Nixon did was not acceptable in anyone's book. We as a nation abhorred that behavior. And we condemned it. And eventually he resigned. But very interesting to me what Gerald Ford said after that process, after he pardoned Nixon, he said, "Our national nightmare is over." Wow. Gerald Ford was a Republican. This kind of lets us know that the tone in our politics has gone far astray, that we're not who we need to be or want to be. From a theological standpoint, I was thinking about, well, what makes a society decent? Is it their politics? Is it our culture? Is it our neighborhood? Is it the norm? What is the norm? Now, I'm going to tell you something. I grew up in a small, small town. It wasn't even really a town where I grew up. It was a wide spot in the road. There was a post office. Okay? There was a general store. But that was down the mountain a bit from where I grew up. My grandmother and grandfather, who lived probably a couple miles from us, raised 11 children on a stone cutter's salary at George Marble Company. So I felt like that I was pretty close to the grassroots of America, the working poor. That's what we came out of. What makes for decency? Did any of you have this fear that if you did anything in the community or anything at school, your parents would know before you got home? Yeah. When we were going to school or going on a trip or doing whatever it was we were doing that was away from my grandparents, they would say this: remember who you are. I think that a lot of what's going on in our culture is that in some ways we have forgotten who we are, and we need to be reminded. What reminds us of who we are? Things like kindness and love and joy and hope. Those are the things that we embrace as a culture. Bill Clinton's book, before he was elected, I come from a place called what? Hope. Yeah. Barack Obama's writings are inspirational, but they are compassionate writings. When we look at our history here, and we look at the different traditions of history, we remember that while greed may have been envied, it has never been admired. Something happened. What happened? We've forgotten what is called the Golden Rule. The Golden Rule is a precept that has dominated every religion and thought process in the world since the time of the Egyptians, and probably before that. It just wasn't written down. Our Aboriginal spirituality says we are as much as alive as we keep the earth alive. Islam, no one of you truly believes until you wish for others what you wish for yourself. Buddhism, treat not others in ways that you yourself would find harmful. Christianity, in everything do to others as you would have them do to you, for this is the law of the prophets. Hinduism, this is the sum of duty. Do not do to others what would cause pain if done to you. This precept runs through our civilized world, through our history. What destroys that? What keeps us from being loving and kind and generous? Is it fear? I have a notion it is. The fear of the other. The fear of someone taking from you what you think is yours. Fear. Fear has never been a good thing. Not much into fear. I don't like people who are fear mongers. But in this search for common decency, one way to strip away our common decency and our care and our compassion is to make us afraid of one another. Afraid of those who are different from us. Yeah. The use of words becomes a powerful tool. I want you to think with me a minute about our politicians. We've had some humdingers over the years. We've had everybody from Harry Truman to Richard Nixon, Thomas Jefferson. We have had a variety of value systems brought into our culture. Just in the state of Georgia, no less. This recent election really pointed up that one of the things that was very helpful to me in it is that it pointed up that, no, we really don't admire this establishment as much as we once did. Yes, there are people who are ready for a change, ready for a kinder, gentler world. Character in the long run is the decisive factor in the lives of individuals and nations alike. A Republican said that, Teddy Roosevelt. Harry Truman, who was a controversial president, to say the least, used this word to describe the power of the president. He said, it's all about words. The power of the spoken word. He said, a leader can make or break a group of people by his or her words. What you speak into being to people can shore them up or tear them down, cause them to live a decent life, cause them to be generous, cause them to be educated, or it can utterly destroy a country. Now, this is coming from the man who, to his credit, implemented the Marshall Plan to rebuild Europe and also desegregated the armed forces. At the same time, he dropped two atom bombs. Our politicians have always been a mix of good, bad, and indifferent, just as we are a mix of good, bad, and indifferent. As a nation, the U.S. has done some evil in the world, but that has not been our goal. Gratuitous meanness has never been a value that was widely espoused by the United States. We may have done so in the name of capitalism, but most of the time we've done so in the name of fear. The Cold War itself was built on fear. Just as you don't yell fire in a theater, you don't, what's the word I'm looking for, fear-monger the public. Why do you want the world in such a state of paranoia? What is gained by that? We know what is lost. We know that this thing called common decency goes out the window when we're fearful or at war. People do things when they're afraid that they would never do if they were in a loving, kind environment. It pushes us to the brink and it dehumanizes everything and everyone we come in contact with. Anybody in here a Stephen King fan? Read or see the miniseries, The Stand? Oh yeah, let me tell you something about The Stand. It is not a horror novel, it is theology from one end to the other. It is dualism in that it's good versus evil. However, there's only one difference between the villains and the heroes in The Stand. The villains are afraid, and everything they do is based on fear. They're dead in Las Vegas, the bad guys. In Las Vegas, and the trains run on time. There's not a drug problem. Everyone knows their place, everyone does what they're supposed to do, and there is no diversity. Up in Boulder, Colorado, they're smoking grass, having these little elections, you know, a kind of a messy society. Yeah. When society is just a little bit messy and diverse, and people are a little late, and our humanity shows through sometimes in the way of flaws, then we know we have begun an inclusive society. And the common decency, actually, I think another word for common decency might be compassion for others. We know how it feels to be down and out. We know how it feels because we care to find out. We visit children who need food. We look at people and find out what their needs are, and we try to supply them. Yep. Fear. If I can convince you that your neighbor is your enemy, then guess what? I've got you by the short hair. From there on out, I can control you. I've not met many people in my life I was afraid of, not just because they had a different political slant or because their skin was another color or because there was a different religion. But lately, I find I have grown fearful. I hear it in my words. I see it when I respond to a Facebook post. I'm afraid of what we may become. Matter of fact, I'm scared to death that we've done something with our compassion. I'm completely frightened. I'm so frightened I don't watch the news. I can't handle it anymore. I go, well, what kind of craziness has happened today? If it affects me at 62 this way, what is it doing to people who are less experienced and don't have the armor built up that you and I have built up over the decades? Can't imagine. But I know when people are afraid, when they think they don't have enough to eat, they become greedy. I know that when people are afraid, they become less loving. I know that when people are afraid of the other, they start checking your credentials at the door, and they talk a lot about what country you came from and what the color of your skin is. So when we talk about restoring common decency, we have to talk about restoring respect. How do we do this? We need to remember who we are and who we are not. We're not the countries that espouse control and dictatorship. We not, and we never have been. We're the messy country. We're a mess. We're a melting pot, but in reality, we're not a melting pot as much as we are just a salad with a little bit of everything in it. Yeah. We need to remember who we are.
And if we don't know, then we need to find out. People say that when we as a country put on the goodness of the Declaration of Independence, that somehow we're being a hypocrite. I was a pastor for a long time. People would tell me they felt like hypocrites when they came to church, and I said, well, there's room for a few more. We all feel that way if we're honest with ourselves. Our aspiration has always been in America that we are the country that welcomed diversity. We didn't always practice it, but we wanted to. That was the bar, that we would live up to that. We are not the country that separates children from their parents. Only in our most fearful times in America have we put people in camps. And that was wrong then, it's wrong now.
Maybe we should just start acting as if we cared about others. That is what common decency is founded upon. Being courteous, being respectful, being compassionate. We need to remember who we are, and we need to practice it. There is a parable that comes from the Middle Ages, late Middle Ages, and it is the parable of the happy hypocrite. The story of a man who is a scoundrel. But in the play, the morality play that the village is putting on, he is called to play the face of the role of a saint, and he is given a mask of saint. And he has to wear it around all the time. And he has to act like the saint in order to be convincing of his role. Well, guess what? Everybody knew who he was. He was a scoundrel. But after that season of wearing that mask of the saint, he was challenged to remove it and go back to his life. And guess what? When he took off the mask, he had become the saint. If we practice love and kindness and joy and respect others and truly believe those words in the Declaration of Independence, if we truly believe the preamble to the Constitution, if we truly practice the Bill of Rights, now don't get me wrong, I'm not one of these people who wants religion and politics to ride the same horse. I cannot imagine anything more terrifying. But we need to learn that what's good for you is what is good for me. If someone in this community does not have the medical care and the food and the shelter they need, I am diminished by that, even though I have everything. We've lost our connection, our common union in humanity. Oh, that happens over on that side of town, or that's another country. Let us build another wall between us. No, never has worked. They all come down eventually. It is always interesting to me that Ronald Reagan is the president who confronted Gorbachev and said, Mr. Gorbachev, what? Tear down this wall. So we have lost something. I want to ask you something. Has it ever occurred to you in your wildest imagination that when you go to bed tonight, you had to worry about an immigrant doing something to you? I mean, what? I don't get it. It's never occurred to me that in the United States of America, I had to be afraid of someone who came from outside the United States of America. Never. Yeah.
It was not an everyday occurrence, but it was one that people's houses who live close to the border would get robbed for food. Okay, not, or jewelry, you know, small things they had to take with them. But there were people who knew that their houses that were by illegal immigrants. And I worked with a guy who went home at lunch. And there was three eagles in his yard getting water. Because the water's hard to get.
Yeah.
They had a sack with three big rocks in it, swinging around, and they beat him up. That man was a, he was, you live closer to the border, you're so removed here from the border that you don't realize the people that live there are in danger many times. Now, they could be just as much in danger from an illegal person, okay? Mm-hmm. But the ones who are doing the crimes are the illegals. And so maybe in Georgia, you feel safe in your home if you're not living in certain areas of Atlanta that I don't even know what the areas are yet, but here you're safer. There you're not.
Okay, I would accept that you feel that way. I understand that. There are lots of people who feel that way. I personally do not. I don't think I have to go to the border or anywhere else to have someone break into my house. That's just, I mean, you live here a while, you'll figure out this place is pretty much like everywhere else in the world. But back to the common decency thing, let me just run through this list of things I wanted to recommend to you. First, do no harm. You know, if we could just get our heads around that and not hurt anyone, that would be a big thing. Second, how about being polite? Courtesy. Common courtesy, it used to be called. That's customer service and common courtesy kind of went out the window. And I'm not sure why. I think it has to do with these talk shows where people yell and scream at one another. That too. Being empathetic. Suffering with. The word compassion means to suffer with. Not being judgmental. I got to work on that one. I'm a judgmental human being. Accepting the uniqueness of everyone in spite of their race, age, sexual orientation, gender, religion, or culture. Yeah. Showing respect to others. Being tolerant. Being compassionate. Being a good listener. Lastly, to treat everyone the way you want to be treated. We're back to that golden rule thing again. So, I think we're supposed to have a discussion now. I've avoided using the T word. Have you noticed that? I know that's always the elephant in the room. Because we are horrified. I am horrified. I don't understand how any thinking, feeling person can't be horrified unless they're so afraid that they're not thinking straight. I think there's a whole bunch of that. In our family, Jerry and I have 5 kids. I don't know what I did wrong, but I've got a Republican. And Jerry has one too, you know? It's like, what happened here? And he argues with me a whole bunch about the world. I don't see it that way. Never have. Sir?
I think we've gotten ourselves in government by and large that plays on all the fears and potential fears of the populace. They might take your job. These people, you know, can take all your money. And to me, it's not just now. I mean, if we see this rise of nationalism and a fear of everything external, to the German population,
yeah.
In the late 30s, we see that basically Joseph Goebbels was the fear monger of the entire country.
Yeah.
And the important thing about that is that he says, "I'm the only one that can save you." Hitler says, "I'm mm-hmm. your salvation, and I'm the one." That
scary, isn't it?
It's scary, Mel? Because we see that happening now.
Yeah, we did.
Fill in the blank. I'm going to save you from whatever it is.
The parallels are there. Yes, ma'am.
To the lady's comment about the border, I wonder how much would change if we had a compassionate immigration policy where people under our laws who wanted asylum would be treated with respect and common decency and wouldn't have to come in under the law and deal with it that way.
Well,
we have had a compassionate immigration policy in the past.
We have at times, and at times we've had one that wasn't so much. One of the great myths is that our ancestors came over here legally.
Yeah.
No, they didn't. All of yours may have, but mine didn't. And a large percent of mine were already here. So when we talk about immigration and we talk about everybody came through legally, let me invite you to go back and read some of the early stories from Ellis Island. And also let me invite you to go read a little bit about the Irish immigration. Now we are very proud of our Irish roots, but there was nothing lower than someone from Ireland in the late 1800s. No Irish need apply was a truism, because we were afraid we were going to be overrun by these people. So, you know, it's hard. Yeah. So, what are we afraid of? What is robbing us of our decency? Are we afraid of being overwhelmed as we perceive France is? Is that our fear? Some people...
We're just fed lies and nothing else. And it started with one television show throughout the media is what I feel like is wrong with America. If we had nothing but PBS and NPR, then we'd be a good country.
Yeah. I think, too, misinformation is a source of fear. But I don't know that any particular news media has all the truth. I think we all spin it.
But in, you know, in the words of Franklin Roosevelt, we have nothing to fear.
The fear itself.
It's our fear of fear. Oh my God, I don't need it. I'll depend on some and common. I'm going to fantasize about superheroes coming. Mm-hmm. Or I'm going to fantasize about a political figure coming. Be afraid.
We also want someone to rescue us. And we want someone to take away our responsibility. You know, we don't want to be responsible for restoring common decency in our community because I don't have time, I've got to work, I've got too much going on, it inconveniences me, I don't want to deal with those people. I mean, the excuses are thousands where we refuse to take personal responsibility. And here's another thing we don't do. We do not confront people. Sitting at the dinner table not long ago, actually been about, I don't know, less than a year ago, I was sitting with a group of people and they were on it about Mexico. And they were on it about the military. And they were just going on and on and on. And basically it was just a Rush Limbaugh feast, okay? Same rhetoric. And I was just like, I'd look at one of them and look at the other one, and I was just like, what am I going to say to these people? Because I don't believe any of that crap you're saying. And before I got up from the table, I said to them, I haven't been saying a whole lot, mostly because I couldn't get a word in edgewise. But I want you to know, as I leave here, that I agree with absolutely nothing you have said in the last 45 minutes. That's all said. And they said, what? What? You're one of those liberals? And I said, and getting more so every minute. Because you have convinced me that I do not want to be like what I've heard sitting here at this lunch table. I don't want any of that in my life. I reject that. It's not decent to hate people you haven't met. It just isn't. It's not decent to hate people you haven't been exposed to on some level. It's not decent to group a bunch of people together and say they're losers. It's not decent. It's wrong. Yes, ma'am. Oh, yeah. That's true. Yeah. No, they're not, for the most part.
We need to be careful of lumping people into these categories and saying, we all want what's best for our people and how to go about
it. We have to look at what we're basing our behavior and our thoughts on. Fear-based behavior, no, not really. That's not where we want to go. Fear-based behavior is that fight or flight behavior.
It really doesn't gain us anything. We need to find a way where we are concerned about every person and their rights, first of all, and secondly, their nurture. How do they become the people we want them to be? What's our standards, et cetera, et cetera. And I have some, I have had a really hard time since this last election reconciling these kind of two opposing things in my head. Yes, I know Joe over here is a good person, but he's a lifelong Republican, and he had not only voted for this administration, he still supports it. And to me, that's like the person who is still fighting the Civil War on the Confederate side. All right? I really struggle with that because it's really hard for me to think that Joe over here has respect for me as a female and know that he supports Trump at the same time. Can't put the two together. It just does his business, you know? And a lot of things in our lives do that. They just don't match up. We live in an era of cognitive dissonance in many, many ways. So, yeah, it's hard. Yes. Yes. I think that is true to a point. I also think there comes a time when you're no longer tolerant. I grew up in the 70s. Right at the time when the promise for women's rights was at its highest. We still haven't passed the ERA, and I don't know that we ever will. Because sexism will be one of the last isms to die. Our gay brothers and sisters, our transsexual brothers and sisters, they will tell you that while things have changed, they haven't. Same way with our black brothers and sisters, with our Hispanic brothers and sisters. Yeah, we have common decency for our own socioeconomic class, but we may or may not have it for the least of these. And to me, the least of these is anyone who's on the outside trying to get in. And I'm going to say something about immigration. I'm not an expert on immigration, Lord knows. Not an expert on much of anything. But Jerry and I, one of the things that we did in churches is that we would go to Central America and build houses, establish clinics, that kind of stuff. And I will say this, we were never trying to push our religion. It was something that we did as a group of people to practice our faith, but we weren't trying to incorporate anyone else into it. It was our faith that we do acts of love and compassion in the world. If I were born in Nicaragua or Honduras or some parts of Mexico, fill in the blank, there is nothing that I would not do, probably, to get my kids in this country. And I say that saying that I wouldn't want to be criminal, but I get it. I absolutely get it. And if you don't get it, you need to take a little trip. Go to interior Jamaica. Go to some of these places where people don't have a prayer. They've been this way for generations, and they know that unless they get their kids out, they will be this way forever. Yes, sir.
We have environs of what you spoke of.
Yes.
The border being one of them.
Mm-hmm.
But we also have just one, any major metropolitan mm-hmm. area in this United States. They are pockets of crisis that Republicans have not addressed it, Democrats have not addressed
sure.
it. And unless we do address those environs, then I don't think the rest of it is going to happen.
No, we have to bring everyone along with us instead of leaving parts of ourselves behind. And that's what we've done. Yes, sir.
One of the problems any current discussion is a failure of whether they mean legal immigration or illegal immigration.
Mm-hmm.
American Indian, Native American people, they migrated from somewhere too.
Mm-hmm.
So we're all immigrants, but the issue that that is not in favor of any kind of mission is talking about the death of this country.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's
absolutely
our blood. And that's been shown in so many ways. But there's a conflict with the illegal immigration, because when somebody tells me that they're in favor of something that is illegal, I have a problem with this, because we are a country that is ruled by law. And so if we have laws, then they should be followed. If we have laws and they're not just, then we should seek to change them.
Mm-hmm.
But to condone illegal immigration because we're tolerant and we're kind-hearted, I think that's great, that we're compassionate. But by the same token, we have, you know, we have laws, and they should be followed. And so I don't think we can ever have a rational discussion of immigration unless we know whether we're talking about immigration or illegal immigration.
Okay.
And I'm for the first time.
Yeah, this lady up here wants to say something. Where we get back to this decency thing, I think it's indecent to deny sanctuary to people. I think it's just, that's just indecent. Tom? Obviously, we need a path to citizenship for lots of different reasons that is applied consistently across the board to individuals. Terry? As we need to reform immigration, we've got to reform our medical system, insurance. We've got to reform all these things. Think about it. Things just don't work the way they should. So at some point, we need proactive leadership that gets in there and says, okay, this situation is broken. So what do we do to make this work for people? And I got one thing to say about legalities. Slavery was legal. Getting an abortion was illegal. Women having their own checking account was illegal. Not getting a credit card without your spouse signing for it was perfectly legal in this country up until the 70s. So I think we have to think about being legal isn't always being moral.
bigger picture here than this. And that has to do.
Okay.
I did some research not too long ago for CFA. And one of the things that I was really surprised was that at the minimum, 70% of the current producers being consumed by the top 1% or top 10% of the income earners in the world, mostly means the developed countries. Wait, you got 90% of the population of the planet living off of the other
'Behove us to care about those people as much as we care about ourselves. And that's the hard part.